Okay, what's going to happen on the show today? It's A Rat in My Tent, a lovely book produced by Brian Foster, which relates stories over the decades, including how spontaneous combustion claimed Brian's father's garage, how he caused havoc on the Wall of Death, the filming of a reserve bridge demolition, and indeed how he taught carpentry and joinery to Malay and Gurkha soldiers. Well, Brian Foster entered the Army Apprentices School at Harrogate in 1950. He graduated to the Royal Engineers in 1953, and in his long Army career, he served in a wide variety of roles with the Royal Engineers. Much of his time is spent abroad in Malaya, Singapore, India and Nepal, as well as West Germany, Gibraltar and the UK. So, again, we talk about writing. Write about what you know. I have a sense that Brian Foster, who joins us in a matter of moments from now, will be a little gem, really. There it goes. Not a rat, but a Boomtown rat in the kitchen, like clockwork. Actually, not in the kitchen, in the tent, of course, because we're delighted now to be able to welcome the author of A Rat in My Tent. That would be the wonderful Brian Foster. Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
Yeah, good afternoon, Alex. I'm fine, thank you very much.
Wonderful to touch base with your good self. You've had an extraordinary, rich and varied career, and now you're an ace writer. This is phenomenal. Going back to your days in Harrogate, the Army Apprentices School, I've just been sharing with Michael Blackburn here, the fact that neither of us were actually old enough to remember national service. But did that help set you on the way for the writer you've now become?
Sorry, was that? Did I what?
When you were at the Army Apprentices School, did you think then that over half a century later, you'd be adding to that as a wonderful writer and autobiographically putting things together?
No, I don't think so for one minute. And in fact, when we joined the Army, we were all offered, if we did 22 years, we would get a pension of 40. Well, 40 when you're 16 years old, is like something beyond the horizon. And so you rarely think about things in the future like at all. No, I don't think I had any ideas of that at all.
That's so true. But let's look at a range of things there. Talk about teaching carpentry and joinery to Malay and Gurkha soldiers. Was that, again, something which you thought, yes, that sort of fulfills my ambition?
Well, that was an actual progression, I suppose, because I did an apprenticeship as a carpenter and joiner at Harrogate. Yeah. And so it was my ambition to practice that trade. And so when I went to Malaya, being offered that position was ideal for me and started me off, actually, in the direction of becoming a civil engineer eventually.
And the title, A Rat in My Tent, clearly one of Moyhill Publishing's finest scenarios on that basis. Adventure and danger from the Royal Engineers to Malaya, Singapore, India and Nepal. Did you ever make friends with the rats, or did you just turn around and say, no, that's it, go away, I've had enough, I want to go back home?
No, far from that. It was quite a traumatic event, actually, because we lived about 1,800 feet up in the Himalayas, and it was freezing cold in the winter. The tents were tied up and sealed up because we had leopards crawling and wolves crawling around outside. And this particular night, we had this rat, and so we set a trap the next night for it, and it was caught in the trap, but it wasn't killed. And I had to get out of bed to actually attack this thing and drown it. But it was in the doing this that it was so sort of excited, I suppose, in a way, because I picked it up with a walking stick and an umbrella and dumped it into a bucket of water. I had the torch in my mouth, and my friend was sitting in his bed laughing at me as I was doing all this. And I thought I'd drowned the rat, and then next to my consternation, he shouted out, "Watch out, Brian, it's crawling up the umbrella." And this rat was crawling up the umbrella towards my head.
He thought you were just giving him a little shower, you know, you were making friends, you know.
Sorry?
He possibly thought you were just making friends with him, Brian, that's all.
Anyway, I successfully drowned it because we had no light in there. After 10 o'clock, all the lights went out because we had the diesel was rationed.
Extraordinary. And this is obviously a period of time where there's a war going on to a certain extent, but you're not in the war environment. Michael, questions from yourself.
No, I was just thinking, was it a big rat? Didn't it matter it in this situation?
Yeah, it was a big one, all right.
Yeah.
I was once told that the difference between mice and rats is the length of their tail. That's the key thing. It's
their general size
on that, basic.
Well, mice tend to be quite small.
Exactly. Well, yes, that's the other thing, of course, length of tail and size of species as well.
Rats can grow to quite a large size, actually.
And there are lots of people who like to keep pet rats, of course, but that's a different line entirely. Let's move on, Brian, because we have a regular correspondent from Gibraltar who joins us on our Midweek Drive Morning Edition programmes called Gabriella Peralta. And I was particularly interested in the tale of how a 4-ton army truck wrecked the limousines of the governor of Gibraltar, the chief of police, the chief justice, and the chief minister.
That's right, yes.
So what went on then? Is this a confession all these years later?
Well, do you want me to fill you in?
I think so. Yes, please.
Well, I was a garrison engineer in Gibraltar, and I was constructing a road at Europa Point, and we had some pioneer soldiers who used to collect rocks all day. And so, to relieve their boredom, I got them to run to drive the dumper trucks and shift the rocks in dumper trucks, and they thought this was great. Except one of these lads who was driving the dumper truck got drunk one night, and there happened to be what they call sortie night in Gibraltar. And he decided to upgrade himself to a 4-ton truck. And being drunk, he pinched this truck and drove it into the town. Now, there's areas in the town which are out of bounds to heavy army trucks, but he ignored that and he drove straight through into this particular area. Well, on that particular night, Mr. Prescott, who was a military historian, was having a film show for those four people, those four VIPs. The film was Waterloo with Rod Steiger. It had just been released at that time. And so he drove past he drove towards this place, Prescott's house, and he hooked a Volkswagen on the back of a 4-tonner, and he was so petrified he just kept going. And so he sideswiped vehicles all the way down the road, and of course outside Mr. Prescott's house were the limousines of the governor, the chief of police, the chief justice, and the chief minister. And so he sideswiped every one of those four cars with this thing that was hooked on the back of the 4-ton truck.
See, these days with rolling news and 24-hour reportage, etc., that would probably be elevated to the lead story in all sorts of ways. And presumably you just got on with it, or was it a case of just mild embarrassment at the time?
Well, my involvement?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I was actually, that night, I was president of the members' committee of the Warrant Officers' Mess, and I was entertaining the Lord Mayor, because sortie day is a very special day in Gibraltar. And I was also orderly officer. So because when this occurrence happened, I was called out to investigate and sort it out. And so I was involved in the arrest of this lad and having him charged, etc. Of course, he was indirectly one of my men. So as I got sort of very deeply involved with the whole thing.
Yeah. What actually happened to him? What was his punishment?
Well, it's rather strange, because his name was Castle, Private Castle, and he got 6 months in Castle jail.
Genius. You couldn't write it, could you? But you have. It's amazing. As well as that, of course, the army experience, 24 years service in the army, and then another 25 years with a firm of civil and structural consulting engineers in Leeds.
That's right, yeah.
So, I mean, of the two careers, do you have a fondness for what? I mean, was it the army that actually had the glamour and the civil and structural consulting engineers, I should say, were slightly more staid, or was it the reverse?
Well, the thing is, when you go in the army, when you reach the age of 40, you've got to make a decision. Are you going to continue with your career in the army, or are you going to go into civilian life? Because obviously you've still got to earn a living. And at that time, I didn't see the prospects in the army were all that good, really, for me. So, and I'd qualified as a civil engineer, as a chartered builder, so I decided to leave the army and practice in civilian life.
Now, there are so many wonderful tales in this wonderful book, A Rat in My Tent, which is, of course, available now online, and all good booksellers and so on. We have to sort of, though, share a couple of classics, really, one of which is how a 4-ton army truck... Oh, we've already done the 4-ton army truck. No, it's the travelling to Darjeeling with Sherpa Tenzing.
Yes.
And an invitation to the Dalai Lama's birthday party. Now, both of those, it would be enough for most lives.
Those are both fist-pumping.
Exactly.
Yes. But I mean, they're both linked in a way, because I went to Darjeeling with Sherpa Tenzing. He offered me a lift, because we knew him, because he came through our camp quite often climbing with various teams. But when I actually got to Darjeeling, I actually went to Sikkim, which is a small kingdom between India and Bhutan. And it's famous for Tibetan silver and jade. And I went there to buy some Tibetan silver. And whilst I was there, I met a German lady who asked me if I would like to go to the Dalai Lama's birthday party at the weekend, because she had two spare tickets.
Honestly, these German ladies, they would just give you, they'd use anything for a chat-up line, really. It's amazing.
Well, she just happened to be there. I think she was doing the same things as buying some jade, I think. Anyway, the Dalai Lama had only just escaped from the Patala Palace in Tibet about a week or so before this happened. And so him and his entourage had all gone to Darjeeling secretly to get out of the way of everybody. Yeah. But it was his birthday party that time. So that's how I ended up, myself and my colleague, at that party. I've got a huge number of photographs of the whole thing as well.
Do we see the photos in the book?
There is one in the book, and it shows the married ladies with their married, they all wear married aprons. They're all queuing up with their silk scarves to be presented to the Dalai Lama. And whenever you're presented to the Dalai Lama, you have to offer him a silk scarf, which he sort of blesses and gives it back to you eventually. There's a photograph of them queuing. And in the background, you can see myself and this German lady under an umbrella, because it was rainy the whole time this ceremony took place.
And speaking about rain, that brings us nicely around to the weather, and travelling through a thunderstorm over mountain ranges in Malaya when you've got an aircraft which has no doors. Sounds very analogous to doing one of these radio programmes, Michael. But
I don't like the sound of the no doors.
Yeah, exactly. Did they let you know the doors weren't actually on, or did you sort of get up in the air and think, hang on, chaps, there's something missing here. Look, it's the door.
Well, yes, I was flown right up into the Malayan, way up into the Malayan jungle in a terrorist area, really, and they dropped me there to do some work. And when they come back to pick me up late afternoon, it was a different plane, because the previous one had actually broken down, and so they cannibalised this plane to get me out. But they didn't have time to put the doors on. But the interesting part of this story is the pilot was...
Did they not hear about health and safety, Brian? I mean, surely there's an issue there, you know?
No, it wasn't much health and safety in the 50s.
And it didn't do us any harm at all, some might well say.
No, I'm sure it didn't.
Outrageous. And what was the altitude you got up to? Because presumably, if you went too high up without doors, you might sort of find oxygen deprivation kicks in.
Oh, no.
Really.
Well, it wasn't anything like that. I mean, the mountain ranges were about maybe 3,500 feet, I suppose.
Well, there we are.
But we got into such a horrendous hailstorm, we had to come back down and follow the river down to get back out. But the interesting part of that story is that the pilot was very much senior in rank to me, and I'd actually had him disciplined only a few weeks before this flight. And so when I went to board this plane, I was rather taken back to see that who the pilot was. And so he really put me through the paces by flying upside down and doing loops and all sorts of things to get his own back.
This again, just adds to the line that this is a must-read book. But I need to ask the question, Brian. Can we see a motion picture about this? And if so, who would play you in A Rat in My Tent, the motion picture?
I don't know. It wouldn't be me, because I'm too blooming old.
Oh, you could be reflecting back on the whole thing. I mean, any particular actor you'd have in mind, you think, yes, actually, he'd do well, actually.
Sorry?
Who would you like to play you in an ideal world?
Who would I like to
yes,
play?
Yes, yeah. Or which actor would you like to play yourself?
Oh, I've got no idea. I've never thought about it.
Well, it's something to obviously ponder on and work through.
Yeah, sure.
Plus, I think Jeremy Irons would be quite good, actually. So, I mean, that's... Michael, any other questions from yourself?
I was just wondering, there's this thing about the spontaneous combustion of the...
Father's garage.
Garage.
Just going up in flames.
That sounds a bit kind of suspicious to me. But...
Yeah. Huh.
Well, I presume you haven't actually read the chapter, would you?
Well, tragically, no. But we have been. You see, these sort of teasers are kind of wonderful ways of actually sort of just sort of convincing us that this is the way forward. But you know, what is the case with spontaneous combustion?
Well, it was about 1948, I think, when I was about 14 years old, and I was sent out to get some coal in the middle of a foul winter. And when I went out to get the coal, my torch went out, so I had some matches. So I lit a twig off of some poplar logs that were in the coal house to give me a sufficient light. And after I got the coal, I thought I had extinguished the twig. Mm. Anyway, I went to bed, and about 1 o'clock in the morning, my mother was banging on the door, shouting, "Come out, come and help your father to put the fire out." Well, of course, the water butt was frozen solid, so we had no water. And I thought, well, I'm really in dead trouble now. And it burnt the whole coal shed down. It burnt half the garage down. My father had to get the car out. He had a devil of a job doing that because it wouldn't start, and it burnt part of the tool of the garden shed down. And so after it all finished, I thought, well, I'm really for it now. And when the fire chief was talking to my father, I heard my father said, talking about spontaneous combustion and expounding this theory. So I just kept quiet. And so all the years, everybody thought that's what happened. And the fire service accepted that story. The loss adjusters accepted it. And my father ended up with a handsome new brick-built garage and coal shed and garden shed.
That's what's
called. And I never told anybody until about 10 years ago. I told my sister in Australia the story. She couldn't believe it when I told her.
That's called the result, isn't it? Yes, that's a fist pumping.
And now you have revealed it to the listeners globally of Siren 107.3 FM. It's extraordinary. This is the kind of thing, of course, that Sally Cronin at Moy Hill Publishing will turn around and say, oh, just don't play with those matches in my office, Brian. You know, just work our way through that. Brian, as we said, this is going to be a standing text. Of course, people can obviously go to your own website, which you can find, obviously, through moyhill.com, and indeed find out my... Rat and My Tent Memoirs, Soldier, a whole heap of other goodies there to your own blog site as well, or just actually use the search engine to type in A Rat in My Tent by Brian Foster. It's been absolutely wonderful just sharing some wonderful thoughts with you, good sir Brian. Will there be a sequel?
No, I don't think so, no. I'm getting a bit too old now.
Oh, nonsense. Yeah. We just become more experientially enhanced. That's
the key
thing.
It took me about six or eight years to put all this thing together, because I wrote it mostly in Spain. And since I come back to England, I managed to get it published. And, I actually did all the editing myself. Five or six times I read the whole thing.
It shows the quality of craft, and thankfully no human combustion was actually involved with the actual sort of final things, otherwise disaster.
Of course, what I must say is that my publisher has been absolutely superb. He was so helpful in so many, many ways, and I've paid tribute to him in the front of the book.
But for the moment, Brian, we are genuinely delighted to feature you, good self. Hopefully you'll come along and join us again in the near future.
Yes, whenever you like to let me know, I'll be there.
Thanks to... the wonderful Brian Foster, A Rat in My Tent, of course, available from all your booksellers and online. The Siren continues ever onwards with a whole heap of magic, as promised. Stereophonics, seeing us out.